Hey, gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, the deja vu of free speech. You've heard it here before, maybe very, very recently, and you're hearing it again. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, follow the instructions, send badly needed fundage. Also, have you heard this before? Go to nationalbugle.com. Download the Co-Certified app. We are number one for downloading the Co-Certified app, because when you are having deja vu, you don't want it to be kosher certified again. And go to nationalbugle.com, download the Co-Certified app. We're number one. Have you heard that before? It sounds familiar. Okay, so this is our show for Friday, and we have Paul Stevenson from across the pond. Paul, welcome to the show.
Great to be with you, Patrick, as always. And by the way, another great analogy for free speech. I actually thought of one because you've inspired me for these free speech analogies. I thought of one earlier. What about the Autobahn of free speech? What do you think of that one? You can use that if you want, maybe some other time.
Yeah, I think I already have used it, but it's a good one. The Autobahn. Do you know the Autobahn song by Kraftwerk from 1970-something?
No, I don't.
Autobahn. We're fun off the Autobahn. It's a good song. Check it out.
I maybe know it if I heard it.
Yeah, it's good.
Have you ever been on the Autobahn?
I have been on the Autobahn. How fast was I far off the Autobahn? It could have been fast, but I didn't go very far. But I did go.
Oh, okay. I've always been interested in going on there sometime, because they go around there. There's no speed limit. You know, it's completely the opposite of living in England and London, where they've got speed cameras and just everything. You can't do anything without getting a fine. You know.
Is Britain the most surveilled country on earth? I've heard it was.
Apparently it is. We've got more CCTV cameras in this country than any other country. I mean, I've probably, you know, in context to our population or landmass or whatever. I'm sure America's probably, it's a bigger country, it's got more CCTV cameras, but for whatever the measuring stick is, we've got more CCTV cameras in Britain apparently than anywhere else in the world. So you have to be very careful here. I feel sorry for someone if they came to London, you know, if they're a new person in London, because you literally will learn the hard way of where you can't park, how long you can park somewhere, what speed you can drive at. I mean, it's just an almost endless list of fines that you can get if you're driving in London, you know, and it's so irritating.
Well, okay, so they've already got the start of the infrastructure of a totalitarian police state, or the mechanisms of dictatorial control. So they've got there is a lot of surveillance cameras for speeders, for traffic, going in and out of the underground and whatnot. There's an awful lot of that, but was a bit of a victory this past week in Britain. Wasn't the 1st of February supposed to be the date that all healthcare workers receive the vax or be summarily executed? What I think it was something like that, wasn't it?
Well, what I do know is, you know, in addition to us having a lot of the restrictions removed and things been pretty much back to normal, we talked about it in the last show, you know, whether that's because Boris Johnson is trying to appease his backbenchers and subsequently his voter bloc in light of the you know, the parties that emerged that he was having while everyone else was doing their best to stop this deadly virus and everyone else was behaving themselves and being obedient, that he was having drinks parties at number 10 Downing Street. So whether it's because of that or what, I don't know. But the whole narrative's collapsed over here now. You're just not really seeing it. There's been a significant change. And the one thing that was left, which has caused a lot of outrage, and there was a big march about it a couple of weeks, is NHS staff, the National Health Service, they've held on to this one where by the 1st of April, they have to, you know, if they want to stay in a job, they have
was
to be vaccinated.
Was it 1st of April or 1st of February?
No, it was due to come to fruition in the 1st of April, where if you weren't vaccinated, that you couldn't work in the NHS beyond the 1st of April. The government have now done a U-turn on that as well. Again, I don't know whether this is people power or whether it's just internal politics within the Conservative Party. I think it's probably a bit of both. Now, the rest of the UK is...
Well, so...
It's
obviously, I don't have as much insight into the workings of British politics as you do. My assumption had been that because of this obvious hypocrisy, I mean, you're the prime minister and you're telling everybody you're implementing all of these programs. You can't leave your house. If you walk your dog, you only get 30 minutes. You're in a bubble. You can't go to anybody else's house. But if you're in a bubble, if you're living alone, you can go to one other person's house. You can form a bubble. All these really draconian restrictions. And yet, there you are. You're Boris Johnson. You're having garden parties where you're laughing and you're drinking and you're eating and dancing, doing everything but comb your hair because you're Boris Johnson. And then you get found out. And so that is, you know, it's not just that he's Boris Johnson, but he, you know, represents the whole system. And so the narrative from the establishment and from the media, which is a big part of the establishment, has to be that, oh, my God, he wasn't following these rules that are so important. So he's got to resign. We've got to get rid of him and get in a rule follower, because obviously what he did put people at risk and everybody could die. If you're Boris Johnson, though, all of a sudden your incentive environment is different. And now, well, you've lost the support of the media and the establishment. They want to get rid of you. Where do you turn? Well, you can't go to Ghostbusters because there ain't no such thing as a ghost. So you go to the people. And what do the people want? The people want an end to all of this. So all of a sudden his incentives are different, and he has to, for the first time in his prime ministership, he has to pay attention to what people want. It was almost as if it would be a democracy. But maybe that's, I mean, that is my assumption. Do you think that might be correct, or is there more to it?
No, I think you're right. And you asked where could he go? He could go to the people. Well, he could go to the people, or he could go to Ukraine. And I think he's decided to do a little bit of the both. Because that's another distraction. I mean, the laughable thing is I saw some one of these talking heads on CNN or something claiming that Johnson was over there, or that Vladimir Putin is using the invasion of the Ukraine as a distraction from his own political issues domestically. I mean, talk about the kettle calling the pot black. But the bigger problem with this Johnson thing, with these parties and everything else, it's not so much that it's just only the hypocrisy and double standards, because we are so used to, people are so cynical that it's one rule for us and another rule for politicians. We're used to that. What it shows, and it more importantly, and bearing in mind, as I'll just preface this with, we all know that politicians above anything else and above everything else are motivated by self-interest more than anything. They're not really interested in serving the country. And so you see these guys at parties, and bearing in mind, as I say, these people are very interested in themselves, their ambitions, their safety, everything. And what it showed is they're not scared of anything. That's why it was so damning. That's why it was so problematical for them, because it was like, okay, what do you guys know that we don't know? How come you're coming on somber, telling us this is such a deadly virus, and we've got to do X, Y, and Z, and social distance, and put masks on, we can't visit our dying grannies, and our uncle with cancer in hospital or whatever, and you guys don't seem to be scared of anything. I mean, is this coronavirus? It's been told it's not allowed to enter number 10 Downing Street. That's why it was a problem, because it really just exposed and illuminated the whole farce that it is and the whole big lie that it is, that there's nothing to be scared of. This thing was completely amplified and blown out of all proportion from the start, because otherwise these politicians would probably have be running around with God knows what white men in white suits, you know, brushing down every yard that walks in front of them to make sure they don't get this thing. But alas, it revealed that they couldn't care less about it, you know. So that's why that's been a big problem. And now the NHS, they've done it. Yeah.
Here's a question. Let's just say you're your average Bob's your uncle. You're just the average bloke on the street. And all of a sudden you've got a situation where Boris Johnson, he was your tormentor. He obviously you know, even though he didn't give a daggone about the coronavirus, and you know, he had his parties without the social distancing, without the mask, all that, and yet he was your tormentor. He locked you down. But now he's potentially your liberator, right? What does the typical person on the street, are they willing to just accept, let bygones be bygones with Boris Johnson, because he might be the one to free you from the establishment? Or are there people there who would say, well, what he did was wrong, we've got to get rid of him, even if it means we're going to have another year of torment? How do people feel about Boris Johnson now, knowing that on the one hand he's a complete hypocrite and he knew he had no good reason for doing everything he did to the British people, but on the other hand, he might be the one person who could end this whole nightmare?
Well, it's a mixed bag. I think people who generally voted for Boris Johnson and his voter bloc are generally, while not completely forgiving of the nonsense we've had to endure this last 2 years, are, I would say, at least a significant minority would prefer to keep him in there because of the obvious alternative. I mean, it's like the next person could be worse. Rishi Sunak. You see, the thing about Johnson is he's very easily swayed, you know, so you could, because he doesn't actually stand for anything. If you make enough noise, he'll do U-turns and things like that. Whereas maybe if you got Rishi Sunak in or someone like that, or God forbid that we had called a general election and you had Keir Starmer get in there, then, you know, they're quite capable and probably would be even worse than Johnson. So
and who's Keir Starmer?
The media are, he's the opposition leader of the Labour Party.
Okay, so he's the head of the Labour Party. The media. And okay, the leader of the opposition. All right. Yeah.
But the media have been quite aggressive towards Johnson. And to my mind, that's because they don't like what he's done. They don't like him giving up those free, or giving people back their freedoms. And so they're like, you know, trying to get him out of there using the fact that he's a liar and he's not principled. But really, I think they just want to get a more obedient puppet in there, someone that is more easily controlled. You know, someone actually worse than Johnson, because Johnson's a complete Zionist puppet himself. You see him out there in Russia with his big narrative. Where, you know, you always know there's a Zionist agenda whenever the Brits are just like start talking like, State Department in the United States, where we have to stand beside America and protect the Ukraine. You know, why do we need to protect the Ukraine? We can't even protect our own borders. And that's not washing with anyone. There's no appetite here. We've seen these illegal migrants coming across the channel. And now we're suddenly obsessed with the territorial integrity, as they call it, of the Ukraine. I couldn't care less about the Ukraine, and the British public couldn't care less about the Ukraine. It's none of our business. I don't know any Ukrainians. Most people don't. We've got no relations with them. To my mind, it's a little corrupt country over there, and it's between them and Russia. And Russia aren't even trying to invade them anyway. It's usual propaganda and BS. But yet we have Johnson over there, and I think he's trying to distract from his own position here at home and maybe trying to, you know, sound like a strong leader, you know?
So, I mean, this is the type of thing they call it wag the dog, because there was a Hollywood movie about a Clinton type of president who was involved in, was it a sex scandal? It couldn't have been Clinton in a sex scandal. That could never have happened. That only in Hollywood. But where in order to distract away from the scandal, then he gets involved in a war in with Albania, actually. And of course, the irony is that when Clinton actually did have his sex scandal, then he gets in a war against Yugoslavia over the Albanian section of Yugoslavia. And that's not good.
Yeah.
Hold on one second.
No.
All right. Sorry about that. Yes, your response.
So, you know, at least you've got Tucker Carlson over there and, you know, some of the Fox News guys who are not, buying into this whole Russia nonsense and Ukraine. But of course, the mainstream media, the CNNs of this world, they're referring to Tucker Carlson and as a Kremlin propagandist and as a Russian agent and all this type of nonsense. I mean, it's so childish. Joe Rogan came out and he said, when he was talking about CNN and some of these other channels, he said, people know it's all bullshit. You know, do they really think that people believe it? I mean, it's so childish. You know, are we really, you know, to call Tucker Carlson a Russian agent? It's really insulting to your intelligence. They are really running out of moves. They're, you know, along with the internet, shows like this, YouTube channels, Odyssey channels, where people get real information. They know that people, at the very least, have much less of an agenda, and they're going to get real information. And even if people aren't always correct, they're at least well-intended. And it's like no one takes them seriously anymore. You have to be a complete and utter abject moron if you believe any of that stuff, you know. And if the COVID thing has done anything, it's woken some naive people up to the fact that governments don't always have their best interests at heart. And that when governments say there's a threat to your country and your national security, and the media are spouting this sort of nonsense, it doesn't mean it's actually the case, you know, like we found out with the war in Iraq. I mean, this whole thing, this whole narrative in Russia, it's exactly the kind of narrative you hear when it comes to invading a country in the Middle East, when they want regime change in the Middle East.
So just a footnote. So Tucker Carlson has been very outspoken against the whole Ukrainian protect Ukraine's borders thing. Unfortunately, then he'll have people on and they agree that, yes, we should be friends with Russia so that we can attack China. I'm not giving him a pass on that, but at any rate.
Well, listen, let me just say this, right? There was a guy called Steve Hilton on Fox News. He's got an English accent, but he's an American. I think he was actually brought up in Hungary. So he did the same thing. He completely debunked the absurdity of the Russia situation with Ukraine and the absurdity of calling anybody who disagrees a Russian agent. And then he went on to say, like Tucker, he said, where are the sanctions against China? Now, listen to this, because I took a note of them, because it's very important. He said, they've been attacking our country for years. Cyber attacks for years. Theft of millions of records. It's a treasure trove of information about everybody who has worked for and tried to work for the U.S. government. Well, let me just say, if I was the Chinese, I would be doing the same thing. Destabilizing our economy for decades. How have they done that? Exactly. If China... there wouldn't be anything in America, because you get everything from China and then you send them little dollars, little bits of paper. It said destroying our working class, stealing our intellectual property. I mean, and pretty much you could you know, interchangeably use the word Jew for China here, because they are the ones, the Federal Reserve and their little puppets in government. They are the ones who are destabilizing your economy and have been doing it for decades. They're the ones who are destroying the working class. They're destroying the currency. They're creating massive inflation. And then he goes, where are the urgent sanctions to stop China's military maneuvers, which actually are hostile? Hostile to who? And, you know, he contradicts his own narrative. He talks about, oh, why should we care about Russia on Ukraine's border? We've got all sorts of problems at home. And then he goes on to say that, you know, China... you know, I've got all sorts of military bases in the South China Sea. And I'm thinking, okay, did you just say the South China Sea or did you say California? Because I could have sworn you said the South China Sea and Taiwan. So what's the difference between that? I think, you know, and Russia and Ukraine, but that's a problem apparently. And then he goes, CBS News, he said that flies 39 warplanes into Taiwan. This is from CBS News. China flies 39 warplanes into Taiwan. Yeah, Taiwan, not Denver, Colorado. Air defense in a day. They're planning to invade Taiwan, controlling the South China Sea. And this is his narrative. And after essentially saying that it's none of our business and it's a whole pile of nonsense with Russia and Ukraine, but this is apparently we're supposed to be worried about China controlling the South China Sea. And then it says China is already in our backyard. And here's his evidence for this. It's aggressively expanding its influence in Central and South America and in the Caribbean. And you're thinking, okay, what sort of nefarious purposes are those Chinese up to in the South China Sea? Have they got all sorts of military bases down there that we're not knowing about? Have they got underground bases that they're building? Well, if they do, this guy doesn't know anything about it. But what they do have, according to him, is they're building roads in Jamaica, telecoms in the Belize. They're giving computers to school kids in the Dominican Republic. Hey, they're building infrastructure in Venezuela.
Yeah, we're up on the break. We're going to take this break.
Well, in the merry month of May,
right back.
From me home I started, left the girls and two were nearly broken hearted, saluted father dear, kissed me darling mother, drank a pint of beer, me grief and tears to smother, enough to reap the corn and leaf where I was born. God has stout my card, the banished ghost and goblets, a brand new pair of brogues to rot the love of the bogs and frighten all the dogs on the rocky roads. A double of one to three for five, up to Harrington or down the rocky road, and all the ways to double of my fallaldy. In Mullingar that night I rested them so weary, started by daylight next morning light, and there he took a drop of the pure to keep me heart and shrink, and that's the paddy's cure when there is up for drinking. They hear the lassie smile, laughing all the while at me curious style, to touch a heart above, and he asked me was I hired and wages I required, till I was almost tired of the rocky road. To double and one to three for five, hunt a hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to double and back for lollyda. In double and next arrived, I thought it such a pity to be so still in the private view of Dunfin City. Then I took a stroll all among the quality bundle, it was stolen in a neat locality. Something crossed me mind when I looked behind, no bundle could I find upon me stick or warren the choir, and after the rogue said me cunnus brogue, it wasn't much in vogue on the rocky road. To double and one to three for five, hunt a hare and turn them down the rocky road, and all the ways to double and back for lollyda. From there I got away, me spirits never failing, landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing. Captain at me rowed, said that no room hardy, when I jumped aboard a cab and flew for Paddy. Down among the pigs, did some hearty rigs, and played some hearty jigs, the water ruined me bubbling. When I fully had, I wished myself was dead, or better far instead. On the rocky road, to double and one to three for five, up to hair and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to double and back for lollyda. The boys have lived for Paddy's cure, when there is up for drinking, they hear the lassie smile, laughing all the while at me curious style, to touch a heart above, and he asked me was I hired and wages I required, till I was almost tired of the rocky road. To double and one to three for five, hunt a hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the way to double and back for lollyda. In double and next arrived, I thought it such a pity to be so still in the private view of Dunfin City. Then I took a stroll all among the quality bundle, it was stolen in a neat locality. Something crossed me mind when I looked behind, no bundle could I find upon me stick or warren the choir, and after the rogue said me cunnus brogue, it wasn't much in vogue on the rocky road. To double and one to three for five, hunt a hare and turn them down the rocky road, and all the ways to double and back for lollyda. From there I got away, me spirits never failing, landed on the quay just as the ship was sailing. Captain at me rowed, said that no room hardy, when I jumped aboard a cab and flew for Paddy. Down among the pigs, did some hearty rigs and played some hearty jigs, the water ruined me bubbling. When I fully had, I wished myself was dead, or better far instead. On the rocky road, to double and one to three for five, up to hair and turn her down the rocky road, and all the ways to double and back for lollyda. The boys have lived but cool, when we safely landed, called myself the fool, I could no longer stand it. Blood began to boil, temper I was new as impure old Aaron's Isle. They began abusing her army, so well says I, me shillelagh, I let fly. Galway boys were by, and so I was a howling wind, below it, hooray, the giant in the affray, quickly clear the way for the rocky road. To double and one to three for five, hunt a hare and turn her down the rocky road, and all the
and we are back. Okay, so you were talking about Ukraine, the people on Fox News who seem to downplay our commitment to Ukraine, and yet we have this massive commitment to the South China Sea.
Yeah. So this guy, Steve Hilton, completely goes against the, and correctly, goes against the anti-Russia narrative, and then tells us all what we should be worrying about is China, because China is aggressively, I don't know why you know this, Patrick, but China is aggressively expanding its influence in Central and South America and the Caribbean, and it's building roads in Jamaica and telecoms in Belize. Am I pronouncing that correct? And he's given computers to school kids in the Dominican Republic, those evil Chinese. They're building infrastructure in Venezuela, and they're actually involved in a deep space listening station operation in Argentina. And he said, do you think this is because China really wants to help those countries? Well, I don't know, but I think if you're building roads and telecoms and Belize and giving computers to school kids and building infrastructure, they're doing a lot more than what the United States did, the Zionist-run foreign policy United States did in the Middle East, because they just go over there and blow everything up. They say, oh, we're nation-building. Yeah, nation-building, nation-rebuilding after you've completely bombed the hell out of it and flattened everything and everybody in the vicinity. So I mean, maybe the Chinese have got some other nefarious motives for this, but Steve Hilton didn't provide any. He said, does America really want to spread democracy in the Middle East? This is what he said. Those are my thoughts. I mean, you could ask the same question. Yeah, does America really want to spread democracy in the Middle East? Because we know in the Middle East, we go in there with this nonsense about spreading democracy and nation building, but this is lost on this guy. But he's got all sorts of nefarious motives attached here to the Chinese, building roads and telecoms and giving kids computers. He said these are hostile moves against America. He didn't describe how these are hostile moves. And then he went on, of course, which is so predictable. And what about all those Americans that the Chinese has killed releasing the coronavirus? Well, we know now unequivocally that Dr. Fauci was involved with gain-of-function research in Chinese labs, but that's not mentioned here. But to blame the Chinese for that, to my mind, is pathetic. We don't even know it. That could have been released by Western intelligence services. Could have been the Mossad or the CIA. It's very similar anyway. There's not much between them. And then he goes, they pour drugs into our country. Well, again,
here's the thing about the drugs, okay? The entire pharmaceutical industry, or at least the basic part of it, was moved to China like about 20 years ago. And so anything pharmaceutical is coming from China. I mean, we just don't produce pharmaceuticals to any great extent in the United States.
Like everything
anymore.
Else, it's coming from China.
So the precursors to anything pharmaceutical are going to be coming from China. And so if you can trace fentanyl to factories in Mexico that got their precursors from China, that doesn't mean anything at all.
Yeah, exactly. Sorry to make this so long-winded, but I thought it was very insightful to the point that I actually took these notes down, which I wouldn't normally do. But he went on, and these are the parts where you can really change the word China for Jew, in my opinion. He goes, Xi is a brutal authoritarian dictator, as opposed to what? All us liberty-loving governments in the Western countries, or Western democracies, like what? Like Australia, like Britain, up until very recently, like the United States, like Austria, all those liberty-loving countries. But no, Xi is a brutal authoritarian dictator. I think they released some of their restrictions over there with coronavirus sooner than we did. He goes, our establishment is in bed with China. They work our systems, exploit our broken lobbying industry to shape policy in their interest. Who does that sound like, Patrick? I mean, the biggest lobbying group in the United States is
AIPAC.
Okay, not a mention of it. And he said infiltrate our universities. I remember there was actually, apart from the actual, white-hating, Western-hating ideologies that the Jews are driving through the universities in a legitimate way, in terms of they're so embedded in there, and all the turning out the Marxist stuff. I know you're not going to like it, but let's just call it anti-American, anti-white, anti-Christian culture. All of that's been pumped out through the universities, and they're just indoctrination centers. But also, I've seen video footage of aggressive Zionist lobby groups on college campuses. But this guy reckons they infiltrate our universities. And there's only two more points. He said, they said they buy American farmland to gain power over our food supply. Again, I mean, that's a whole topic in itself. And when are we going to get serious about China? When? He bangs the table, When are you going to get serious about everything you've just listed there is actually a fifth column in your country? And it doesn't get a single mention. China aren't, it's like, I'm sure China aren't perfect. Would I want to live in China? I don't know. I mean, if the coronavirus stuff continues in the way we live and the way it's getting over in the West, I don't know. Would China be that much different from, let me put it this way. I could probably talk about Jewish power and without worrying about the Chinese authorities coming and arresting me and then bribing and intimidating our crime prosecution service so I go to prison for 5 years.
Okay. Hey, we are up on the next break. We're going to take it, and we'll be right back. Well, I'm a little bigger man, I'm beginning a teen. I can teach Dora Moore and the little Lally Green. And I know him from the leafy, from the bishop to the zoo. And I know him by the name of Johnny Doo. Of all the things going on, the bacon is the best.
girl at a table, come on and look at Mega Man, and how do you do with your rights and your bikes and your old rigadoo? Buy a pair of leggings and a collar and a tie, and a nice young lady I will fetch by and by. Buy a pair of goggles and a collar, then do, and an old fashioned lady I will make her a two. I got the sky, I got the road, I got the sky, the world is my home. And I sat way down in a barrack of a barn, and I went like a man, and I sat till the dawn with the holes in the roof and the rain coming through, and the rats and the cats, they were playing peek-a-boo. Who should awake but the woman of the house? On the apron and a calico blouse, she began to fight, and I said, "Boo, girl, don't be afraid, I'm only trying to do."
Talk about some sort of weird tunnel vision. So, mentioning the universities, okay, China's infiltrated the universities. Well, okay, so there are these Chinese studies programs or whatever in universities where you've got Chinese government funded programs. Okay, so those exist. Now you look at the Ivy League schools, which are not necessarily our eight very top schools, but they are eight of our top schools. There are eight of our like nine oldest schools in the country, or eight out of the 10 oldest schools. It's really a sports league, but anyway, we talk about it a lot. They are amongst the hardest to get into. And last time I checked, which was 2 or 3 years ago, six out of eight of them had Jewish presidents. Then the Dartmouth was an outlier. It had a Korean president, and Brown had a Negro lady president. Not a single white person, you know, non-Jewish white, not a single non-Jewish white in charge of any of those schools. And if you look at
not a single Chinese person, I imagine, either.
Not a single Chinese person, right? And then, I remember a few, maybe about a year ago or so, somebody had sent me a video of Dr. Lee Merritt, who knows a thing or two about medicine, but when she was talking about her theory of the deadly coronavirus that, you know, it was a Chinese bioweapon, but not that the virus itself was a bioweapon, but that the vaccines would be bioweapons. Well, the vaccines are made by, because she's, and her narrative was that these companies like Pfizer and Moderna have these, you know, Chinese interns or, you know, Chinese researchers who come over and are secretly going to manipulate the vaccine secretly, because, you know, so that are the very benevolent Jews who run them, who would never do anything to screw the goyim. Yeah, all these well-meaning Jewish-run pharmaceutical companies are going to be tricked by low-level Chinese technicians into creating a bioweapon out of the vaccines. I mean, that was her whole narrative, which was insane and retarded at the same time. You know, so there are all these people who will see some sort of Chinese role somewhere. And it'll be like a tiny little mushroom under a oak tree, and the oak tree is Jewish power, and you know they got these blinders on, but that's the way it is, isn't it?
Well, I think it's the way it is, and it's deliberately that way, because the Federal Reserve and the Jewish media, those are the two big arms of Jewish power, the biggest ones, and second only to that, I suppose, is their power in academia. Like you've outlined, there's no Chinese people in there. There's no white people. In fact, if you're Chinese or white, you're going to be discriminated against from getting in there because they've lowered the bar so much to allow so many black students in there. But anyway, they have to take the spotlight off them. So rather than blaming the Federal Reserve for everything this and the Jewish media, this clown Steve Hilton has decided to, you know, blame everything there on China. Now, I'm not saying that China doesn't have its own interests. Of course, it has its own interests. But any threat that China may be to the United States has been created by Larry Summers and other corrupt politicians and government officials over the years to line their own pockets. But the type of stuff that this guy's talking about, Jewish power and those that have bought and paid for that make up a fifth column in the United States and right across the West are a hugely, vastly bigger threat than anything China poses. But alas, you see, as I say, I think you've hit the nail on the head. It's a distraction from the spotlight being put on who's really doing all this sort of stuff, you know. And I guess some people believe it. I mean, you know, Tucker seems to believe it. I think Tucker Carlson's an honest guy. And he just doesn't seem to look in the direction of who runs the media, who runs the Federal Reserve and, you know, the financial system globally, really. But I just don't understand how they can't look at those things, you know?
You know, it's...
Even Peter Schiff does. Peter Schiff's a guy I listen to. And Peter Schiff's Jewish. And yes. He'll blame the right guys. Now, Peter Schiff is one of those rare guys. I know they're out there. Who... It's very honest, and in many ways, he's not that Jewish. He's just not your typical Jew, you know. He even says Happy Christmas, and he said, I'm not a particularly religious person, but he said Happy Christmas, it's the birth of Jesus Christ, and everyone celebrate that. And you know, Jews don't say that. They hate the name Jesus Christ, you know. But this guy, he points at the Federal Reserve, but Fox News can't bring themselves to even look in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's. You had mentioned earlier kind of the wag the dog scenario. We didn't really get into it, but for getting back to Boris Johnson, for instance, one other strategy would be to get involved in some sort of patriotic military action and everybody rally around the flag. He has been bellicose with Russia. He has been sending over military assets to Eastern Europe, to nearby the Ukraine, and I guess inside the Ukraine to an extent. But does that seem at all like a viable strategy? Would people in Britain actually want to rally around a flag? And especially if the prospect is for Britain and America to be on getting their butts whooped on the losing side of some little war?
I don't think there's any appetite for it either on the left or the right in this country. If you look at some of the comments, you know, in some of the, you know, so even like, again, those sort of center right type channels and talk radio and things like that, who are to some extent buying into this narrative of what's happened in the mainstream narrative. But when you look at the comments, it's always a better way to get an indication. Invariably, what you see is, shouldn't we look after our own borders? Haven't we got enough problems at home without worrying about the Ukraine? Just the sort of stuff I'm saying here, the sort of common sense thing. So I don't think among the people there's that much appetite for it. Generally, it's probably left and right. But, you know, the news media are pumping it up. Of course, Sky News, BBC News, it's all anti-Russia. It's all lies. Oh, they annexed the Ukraine. And apparently now they've got 100,000 soldiers over there in the Ukraine border now preparing for this invasion by Russia, that even even the president of the Ukraine himself, in response to Joe Biden's hysteria around this issue, said more or less calm down. I mean, this isn't as bad as you're making it out to be, you know. I think when that video I sent you, they're talking about these oligarchs around Russia and these sanctions and everything else. And I think they're trying to meddle in the internal affairs to try and remove Putin, because Putin has been a big, apart from anything else, to my mind, it's got to be part of it, where Putin has been a big problem in removing Assad and for Israel's expansion for hegemony in that region. And they weren't able to do it because of Russia's alignment with Syria. And if they could put a puppet in there instead of Putin in there, they could continue their agenda there in the Middle East, which Putin thwarted.
And isn't that just madness? I mean, is there any prospect of them being able to regime change Russia? Because there's, you know, if you were talking about like an all-out nuclear war or something, well, both sides get annihilated. If you were talking about a war in a kind of neutral or right, not home turf of either side, like if you were having some sort of proxy war in Southern Africa or Latin America, well, that would be one thing. But if you're talking about having a war right on Russia's doorstep, where A, they've got proximity, and B, they've got real motivation, where it really means that they know what they're fighting for. How on earth would they win a war like that? And short of Putin losing a humiliating war, doesn't he have enough public support? I mean, what on earth do these people think that they can regime change either Putin or Xi Jinping, when those countries, in spite of everything that's gotten thrown at them, especially in Russia's case, in spite of all the sanctions, they're doing better. And you look at opinion polls, and the Russians and the Chinese are optimistic about the future, and they're content with the direction of their country. And you look at Western countries, you look at America, and, you know, a very commonly asked question in opinion polls is the direction of the country. Are we moving in the right direction or the wrong direction? And it's always very large majorities we're moving in the wrong direction.
Yeah, well, the things that matter to people are things like your borders, immigration, the economy, law and order. And when you look at all the Western countries, it's the same here. All those things are heading down the toilet. You know, law and order, the economy, and this, which is even worse now after the COVID money printing extravaganza and abomination, and immigration, which, again, you know, we had more illegal immigration just coming across those channels than we had legal immigration in 1994, before Tony Blair doubled it in 2001. I actually do think, though, that these people are crazy enough, and that they could be motivated by knowing that the actual reality of the economy is a complete and utter disaster, ready to implode or just completely blow up if they destroy the dollar. And what better way to distract and try and sort of move the chess pieces on the global political board and see if they can come out of it any better than they are and get a great reset or whatever, and blame everything on the war, because that's what they do. They always have a distraction. John Salenti has a very good statement. He always says, when all else fails, they take you to war. So I'm watching what's happening in the Ukraine, because that could kick off at any moment. And if they want a war, although it'll be a false flag thing, there'll be some there'll be some missile launched into Ukraine, and Putin will be blamed for it. And everybody knows it's all BS. Most people do anyway, but there's nothing you can do.
Okay. Oh, and before we move on to our next subject, a couple other points I just want to get at. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., maybe you heard of, maybe Dr. Duke was talking about this today, or maybe he wasn't, but he was very interested in a interview. This guy named Theo, what's the guy's name? Theo Vaughn, who actually used to live like just on the other, like was, I think, practically a next door neighbor of Dr. Duke, but he's got a pretty popular podcast. And you know, in interviews, when he was in an interview with Joe Rogan, and Joe Rogan had said, "Oh, you used to live next door to David Duke. What was that like?" And Theo Vaughn, to his credit, said very positive things about David Duke. So, at any rate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. was on Theo Vaughn's podcast, and it might have been a few weeks ago, but he had a lot of very interesting things to say. These are things that he had written, that Kennedy wrote in his book. And there's a lot about, I mean, the book is about Fauci. And so there's a lot about the gain of function research done in China, why Fauci was funding it in China. But also there was a lot about the research that was being done in University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. And you know, it's not at all clear. It's still not clear. You know, like Kennedy seems to think that this was a man-made virus, but it's not at all clear really whether it came from Wuhan or whether it came from North Carolina. At any rate, one other interesting thing that he said was when the virus started circulating in China, in, I guess, late December 2019 and January 2020, you know, there's been a lot of commentary about how extreme the measures that the Chinese took in locking down cities. Well, I think it was really only locking down Wuhan and Hubei province, that the rest of the country really wasn't locked down. But also, there was a lot, you know, Tucker's made a lot of people coming, you know, people being dragged out of their houses and put into quarantine. But of course, the thing, what Kennedy was pointing out was, well, yeah, they were put in quarantine and treated. And the Chinese have treated using things like hydroxychloroquine, and they've had a very successful treatment program. Whereas in the United States, when people got sick, they were sent home until they got blue lips and could barely breathe. And then they were brought in and put in old folks' homes where they could spread it to all the old folks. And they were given, Remsviridol or whatever it's called. Which, if that didn't kill them, then the respirators did kill them. That the Chinese approach medically was just made a lot more sense. And what was going on in the United States had made no medical sense. And only can be understood if you accept that that our rulers have very malevolent objectives. So I thought that was interesting. Before we move on to the NFL, do you have any comments about that?
Yeah. Well, at least with the Chinese, you know, they're consistent. It makes sense. I mean, when you look at all the policies over here, whether it's COVID, whether it's a homosexual agenda, you know, whatever it is, it's always counterintuitive to the national interest. At least with China, while you love them or hate them, or, you know, and if you find their methods odious, at least they can explain. You can look on and see why they do it. You know, everything's done for the national interest. And we might not like how they go about that, but at least they're consistent. We don't have that. And it's quite obvious that our governments are always working against the people. You see the same thing happening in Canada with these truckers and stuff like that, and the government hate it. At least you know where you're at with the Chinese. You know, they're not duplicitous the way we are.
Okay. Hey, one last thing before we go to the break. I was just going to make a comment. The Chinese have a little bit of a problem demographically because during the one-child policy, which only ended about 5 years ago, there was an excess of men being born
over women. So there's maybe 50 million more men than women, mostly concentrated in younger generations. And that's always a problem when you've got too many men and not enough women. But what we have here in the United States, between lesbianism and coal burning, you have in, amongst young white people, the effective male to female ratio is just abysmal. And it's resulted in massive incel, whatever the noun form of incel, incelism. And that can't be good for society.
You can add feminism to that as well.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, so you can add feminism to it.
Yeah. All right. So anyway, I just thought I'd point that out. We'll be right back. And Paul, I understand you are an NFL fan.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say I'm a fan of the NFL per se, but I'm a fan of the football. I enjoy the football. I mean, I enjoy sports myself. I played a lot of sports when I was a kid. I played a lot of hurling. I was the captain of my team. My father was a very serious Gaelic footballer in Ireland. So I understand that kind of competitiveness, and I understand that sort of obsession with sports. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I understand it. And so I watch the American football. I enjoy it, and I do my best to ignore the the end racism and end hate and all that little virtue signaling stickers on the back of their helmets and all that sort of stuff. But this week I went into a new higher gear, because there's a guy called Brian Flores, who was the head coach of the Miami Dolphins. And he had a good record there as a coach in terms of the results. And he was sacked. And recently he has filed a class action lawsuit against the entire NFL, because there's only one black coach out of 32 head coaches in the NFL. And this is his argument.
Is there only one?
Yeah.
Who is
there? There is only one. It's the manager, the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers, okay? However, that, you know, when you say it like that, that sounds like, you know, oh, well, that doesn't seem right. But his whole argument is based around the fact that, you know, as I say, that this is a pattern, and that he's going to sacrifice his coaching career to, you know, to promote change. And he, I guess he sees himself as some sort of Martin Luther King in, you know, in the NFL kind of thing. And of course, he's got all the plaudits and support for being so courageous among the little white cucks on media like Mike Florio and lots of these other guys. What's his name? ESPN guy, Jewish guy, Max Kellerman. Just everybody. It's just harmonious loving for this guy. And they're all coming out and saying, yeah, it's about time, and all this type of stuff, because they're, you know, the NFL is so racist. And his statement said, listen to the absurdity. In certain critical ways, the NFL is racially segregated and is managed much like a plantation. It's 32 owners, none of whom are black, profit substantially from the labor of the NFL players. Now, he's also, this guy's just, I mean, in my
yeah. These slaves with their eight-figure salaries, yeah.
Yeah, so exactly. He's aware of the current climate. He's angry that, by the way, apparently this guy is very difficult to work with. Now, he's come out and said, oh, they're trying to paint me as your stereotypical angry black man. Well, I'm sorry, but he fits the stereotypical angry black man category, because at the moment, there are six positions available in the NFL for head coaches. One of them was with the New York Giants. We haven't got time to cover all this, but it's quite interesting. But this guy is so angry. He's got the victim angry gene in such abundance that he couldn't even wait to see if maybe he got a job with some of these other teams, because he's on the market, he's available, and he had a good record. And he couldn't even wait to see if some of these other teams might have hired him. All he knows is he went for an interview with the New York Giants, and he didn't get the job. And apparently the New York Giants had already decided on a coach, and they're saying that's evidence that they're not interested in black coaches, that they're basically, you know, playing a game where they want to be seen not to be, you know, discriminatory towards black coaches. And they just bring them into the interview, but it's actually just theater, and they'd already decided on this guy. Now, I don't think that's the case. I think they had a front runner, and they had an interviewing process, and they decided that they've got a guy that's probably going to get this job. But like any job, you can have a guy in mind for a job, but you might have like half a dozen candidates you're going to interview, and you'll interview them anyway, even if you think, well, we've pretty much decided, but let's go through the process, because someone else might really jump out at us, and we might have a really strong feeling about him and say, you know what, we were going with you, but this guy has impressed us so much that this is the guy. So
That could happen, but there's one other job I say he should look into. He could do the whole tranny operation, and maybe he'll be a Supreme Court justice, because he's already black.
Yeah, I know. But I mean, 70% of the players in the NFL are black, and they're actually using that as evidence of discrimination, because they're saying, how can we have 70% of black players and it only translates into one head coach? Not, we're massively overrepresented here in black players to start off with, you know.
You need testosterone to be a player, and you need brain cells to be a coach. I guess that's it. But whatever. Anyway, thank you so much for joining me.
You're welcome, Patrick. Great to be with you.
And I'll be back again next week with more exciting episodes of National Junior Radio.